Good morning and welcome to episode 67 of Taking the Charge podcast. Merry Christmas. Ho, hey. Ho, ho.
Ho, ho. Bah humbug.
Hey.
Indeed.
You can't do that. With you as always from Regensburg, Germany, David Hine of Hine News. And with me...
Hi, this is Oz Davis of BallinEurope.com coming to you from Budapest, Hungary, where we say bulldog karancsonyot.
Bulldog?
No, not bulldog. Not bulldog. Americans always end up saying bulldog, but it's bulldog.
I can tell the big difference.
There is.
Yeah, yeah. Frohe Weihnachten.
It's Merry Christmas.
Frohe Weihnachten as well.
Yeah, yes. Joyeux Noël.
Yes. Feliz Navidad.
Hey, all right, racking them up here. We don't know how to do it in Chinese.
No, so. We don't know how to do it in Chinese now. okay, so we thought as a Christmas gift to everybody and New Year's, and we would take a look back at all of the presents that were given to us during the year in the basketball season, huh? Basketball 2013 calendar.
Yes, history will have the last word on how 2013 itself was as a year globally. However, I think most folks would agree that it was a pretty interesting year for basketball. Pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, and lots of stuff, as always.
Wow, as always.
Yeah, you know, everybody, you know, says, oh, another week's gone by, another year's gone by, whatever. And you know, I can't believe, you know, it's gone by so fast. And I always say, yeah, but you know what? So much has happened. You know, and when I knew that we were going to be doing this year in review show, you know, I was sitting and thinking of the things that happened, and the list got longer and longer, as Oz knows very well.
Yeah, I received this crazy list on which actually maybe half a dozen things that we later came up with were omitted. And so basically it's like one relevant story per week through the year. I mean, you probably came up with
about, I don't know about
50 relevant stories.
I don't know about 50.
So,
but I'm saying, but seriously, like, you know, you could, yeah, I guess probably you could, you know, because some weeks there'll be more than others. And so, yeah. So we kind of broke it down into, this is going to be, this episode, if you will, is going to be broken down into two episodes. And we're going to look at some of the top 20 stories of the year 2013. We'll kind of do a quote top 10, 20 to 11 this week, and then for New Year's, you'll catch then the top 10. So that's roughly what we're going to do the next two episodes, so you have an idea. We're just going to look at what's going on in the past year, and so no guests. We're thinking about maybe putting interviews in, but there just was a lot of stuff going on in it, and it would have been difficult to kind of plan that. So, first, I guess, please, if you you know, if you like the show, you know, let us know. Send us, you know, rate and review us on iTunes. Catch us, you know, send us questions either at email or you know, that's for me. It's Hine News at GMX. On Twitter, I'm at Hine News. You know, send us comments. Send us things you want us to talk about. I think next year I want to actually come to us with questions, and that we can kind of discuss things that way as well.
Well, I'll tell you what, if these two podcasts don't draw any comments, there is no hope, Dave. I'm sure that we have forgotten something or have bumped something off the list that surely someone out there will want to argue.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's hope. Oz is available at...
You can check out the website, edited now by Emmett Ryan at BallinEurope.com. The Twitter feed is BIE_basketball. And what else should I give? I just want to plug again the Facebook page for Taking the Charge podcast.
Yeah. Forgot about that. All right, so let's kind of get into it. We figured start with the Hall of Fame. Gary Payton, the glove, obviously was, I'd say he was part of one of the most exciting teams. I'd say arguably one of the most exciting teams to never win a championship in with him and Sean Kemp. And
I thought you were going to go with one of the most exciting number one seeds to lose to an eight seed.
Yeah, you could say that as well, you know.
He
got in and – yeah, okay, so –
The interesting thing about Payton is that ultimately it appears, sadly, that he's going to go down as the greatest basketball player in Seattle history. You could make the case for Kemp, but there is the abbreviated career. You could make the case for Jack Sigma, possibly, but the glove is still loved in Seattle to this day, despite the fact that they don't have an NBA team.
And he actually fought to keep that team there too.
Yes, as we saw in the documentary right. that we reviewed on this show, Payton played an active part in attempting to keep the Supersonics alive and viable in Seattle back when certain forces were moving to move them to Oklahoma City. So I'm glad to see Payton in the FIBA Hall of Fame. I'm not exactly sure what international credentials he has other than he played on Dream Team 2, did he not?
He has two gold medals. Olympic.
Oh, he does. Okay.
He has two Olympic gold medals. Okay. And he has a silver at the U19 Worlds back in Bormio, night 87.
Wow. Were you there, Dave?
No, I wasn't. But if I'm not mistaken, that 87 team, I'm probably not going to find it at this time. Yeah, that was the epic Yugoslavia team in 87 with everybody. You know, that had, hang on, I have it right here. So you had Petrovic, you had Divac, Kukoc, Radja, Georgievich. So yeah,
that no, was. Vlade wasn't on that team, huh?
No, Vlade was, yeah, Divac, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically you had the what would become the monstrous Team Yugoslavia as a youth club against Gary Payton's Team USA.
So yeah, plenty of criteria actually. Two-time Olympic gold medalist, the glove. Congratulations on getting to the Hall of Fame. The other big name was Oscar Schmidt, who, you know, I have to admit, I never saw him play. As disappointing as that is, you know, Oz has a couple of years on me, so.
Yeah, I have to draw way back. I have to exercise the brain cells quite a bit. But yes, I can recall seeing him play an international ball back in the 80s. Of course, Oscar Schmidt, despite the fact that he may be the all-time point scorer in club play, if all things are considered. First division club play, let's say. But he'll of course, be most remembered for almost single-handedly knocking off Team USA for Team USA's first ever Olympic loss. Let's say first ever undisputed Olympic loss, yeah. Second loss ever after 72. And a lot of people feel like this was the trigger for the Dream Team and for professionals in Olympic sports and all that followed thereafter. So just by this one game alone, you could make an argument to put Oscar Schmidt in the FIBA Hall of Fame. But the man had an absolutely outstanding career on a couple of continents. It is said that he's the best player of all time never to play in the NBA. And as much as I don't dig on hyperboles, I might buy that. I might
that's
side
probably
that.
Pretty close. That's
yeah,
close.
I might side with that. Yeah.
I mean, you look at, you know, in 88 at the Seoul Olympics, he averaged 41.9 points. All-time Olympics, 28.8 points a game in three Olympics. You know, made, he's the all-time World Cup leading scorer, 24.1 points a game. I mean, just just unstoppable. You know, without having really a lot to say, it's one thing I just kind of wonder is what took so long. You know, it's been 10.
Yeah. The FIBA Hall of Fame always manages to put together a decent list of men's players, women's players, you know, referees, officials.
Yeah, Don Stanley made it to the
Olympics. And yet every year you have these guys and you say, why aren't they there?
Yeah.
I think that FIBA Hall of Fame should take a page from the NBA Hall of Fame and put the Dream Team in the Hall of Fame. I think that if Olympiakos actually pulls the three-peat, I think FIBA Hall of Fame should put in Olympiakos, KK Split, and the Dream Team next year. I honestly think that, I mean, this would be a way to acknowledge a lot more key players on the international landscape than just, you know, two or three at a time every year. I mean, there's so many worthy. But we're talking about international ball. We're talking about, you know, today hundreds of programs. Well, I wouldn't go that far, but over 100 programs. You know, there's a lot of history out there, and that could be acknowledged.
Yeah. So that was back in September when Oscar and Gary Payton, among others, got the call to the Hall. Let's move to let's call it 19. The International Olympic Committee decided against giving 3-on-3 basketball a chance as a demonstration sport at the 2016 Olympics, with then hopes of possibly being a full-fledged sport at 2020. And at the same time also decided against increasing the field at the Olympic basketball tournament to 16 teams from the current 12. I think I kind of agree on both of these. I mean, 3-on-3, IOC is kind of looking to, and this point kind of hits on both of them. IOC is actually kind of looking to lower the number of athletes. This would just, and if you're going to have 3-on-3, it would also probably be, you know, you probably have to, you know, at least have 12 teams, so you're increasing that number of athletes as well. It's also, you know, I think FIBA were a little bit too quick on the trigger on this one. I think they should have tried to establish it a little bit more before going to the IOC and you know, maybe try to do it for 2020 as a demonstration sport to make it a full-fledged sport in 2024. Just because you don't, you want to see what's there, you know, and this gives you a chance to work out the kinks that they had throughout the first year, and figure things out, and you don't even know how teams qualify for international competitions necessarily yet. I mean, there's some things, but you know, there's a lot of things that can be worked on, and I think if they had tried to kind of just build it first a little bit and then give the IOC a better product, I think they could have, they had a better chance. And now you have the IOC saying no. I mean, maybe the thought is, okay, they were pretty sure that they're going to say no because there's still all this advancement to be made. And so that when they go to them, I don't know, in 2, 3, 4 years again, they then have that, progress that's been made, you know? And so then, because if they hadn't, then the IOC wouldn't necessarily look and say, ah, okay, we know, you know, we don't have no idea where you were 5 years ago, whatever, 4 years ago. And this way now they say, okay, you guys are at this level. And then the next time, if they want to, the next time they go into it and apply for a sport, then they could say, well, look, you remember where we were back then. And this, you know, this is where we're at now. So maybe that's the tactic that they had. I don't know.
Wow, geez. Okay. I would like to say that on these two decisions, I am thumbs up and thumbs down. Look, this is good insight into 3-on-3 basketball, Dave, but look, the first argument is Does anybody like 3-on-3 basketball?
See, I didn't want to I didn't want to rip the people that do like 3-on-3 basketball. I know you don't have a problem.
Okay,
with
okay, 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 okay. But here's okay. Let's say there is a fan base. Let's say they break out a few key players, and okay, you draw the audience. Okay, fair enough. I mean, 3-on-3 ball is okay, sure. But here's the short list of sports: baseball. Should I go on? Softball, karate. What else do we have? Squash. I mean, wakeboard. I mean, I think that this audience is a little bit bigger. I think the 3-on-3 is a no-brainer for the IOC, even as a test sport. Karate? I mean, really? No. I don't think there's a comparison here. And in fact, roller sports is being considered too. So we might get roller derby as a test sport. Yeah, exactly. Yes. A favorite among the film review section of this podcast. As far as the 16 teams, I mean, 16 might not be bad. I like 16. 16 is a round number. 16 is sweet 16. And I also think this. FIBA makes much of their rankings, of their rating system. Okay? I think that you could easily expand this tournament to 16 teams and then just go down that ratings board and take the top team from each continent that was left off. Period. That's it. I mean, nice round number. It lends itself better to tournament formats and to even group play formats. I mean, 16 is four groups of four. That's easy, right? Things like that. It's a better number. Now, I know it increases the workload for the journalists, but it is the Olympics.
No. Actually, it would lessen the work because and I don't know how I don't know what the plan is for the Olympics in 2016. You know, they're gonna obviously stay with 12 teams, and I don't know if they're gonna do just one gym or if they're going to break it down into two gyms and have three games a day.
Wouldn't 16 be a better number? You might even need two gyms.
You need two gyms. You can't do it in one gym. And I wonder if that's one of the points of the IOC saying, we need another facility. We're taking on these additional players, these athletes, and we need another facility. I don't know.
Well, for 2016, it wouldn't be fair because the bid was based on, you know, one basketball court. But for 2020, I believe they would still have time to change it if they so chose. Can they still change it for 2020, or was this?
Imagine they could apply again. I mean, it's
okay. So this Knicks was for 2016.
It was 2016. Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
It was 2016 and beyond. How I assume so. The one thing I just wonder a little bit if it had taken away a little bit of the exclusiveness of the 12 teams. You know, any of these competitions when they grow, you know, four teams. Going from 12 to 16, you're not quite, if you want to call it, watering the field down. But you know, anytime you do add more teams, you know, it's no longer the elite of the elite, you know, it's, you know.
I suppose, but with the new format, everything's gone to the wind, right? I mean, we might not be getting the best teams in the qualifying tournaments, so, you know, it might be nice.
If you don't qualify, you don't qualify.
Yeah, okay. All right. Refer back to podcast number 47 or whatever it was for David Hines' rant on this matter. Next subject.
I thought the fact that Egypt made the final and took the silver medal at the Afrobasket, losing to Angola. I thought that was a pretty big story. And I think it's first of all, on a couple of levels. First of all, I think that Egypt, Egyptian basketball is on the rise, a little bit. And, you know, they have a good group of young players, and I think this result really helps them, to build the program, you know, so they'll be at the World Cup, in 2014. So this exposure helps them build the system and everything. And another And one of the most interesting facts is that this actually could happen, in that you could have a team lose all three of your games in the first round and you could still win the whole thing. That's what happened. You know, Egypt was in Group A with hosts Ivory Coast, Senegal, and Algeria, and lost all three, and then went on a four-game winning streak to reach the final, and then took home the silver. So, you know, in every other competition format, these guys are long gone.
I love this. The most disturbing.
I mean, they upset, and then they get seeded. So there's 16 teams, group, you know, four groups of four, and then you have a seeding, you know, and then the first team is grouped against the fourth seed from the other one. So they played against Tunisia, who had won their group. They were the reigning Afro champions and Afro basket champions, and they knocked them off in the first round, got by Cape Verde, and then got by Senegal to reach Angola in the final. This format is you're going to see a lot of this format more and more. The U17 World Cup next year, both men and women are going to be this format, and I think more and more of these teams, these federations are going to go this way.
It's disturbing, because here's one of the things here's one of the things I don't like about American professional sports in these times, is that you're no longer required to play throughout. Whoever gets hot at the end, whoever gets hot in the tournament wins.
Yeah.
That's it. You can catch lightning in a bottle. You can go 0-3 in the first three games of the tournament of a what? 7-game tournament, 6-game tournament for each team that goes all the way.
I think they played 8, 1, 2, 3, 4. No, 7 games. Yeah.
Okay. So they go 4-3 and win the tournament, doing just enough to win, eh? I think that's completely disturbing. And I'm not sure if I'm beating a dead horse here, but I'm going to go to it anyway. And that is, and here you are saying you got to qualify to make it in, you know? And what you could do is just have a freak show that, you know, benefits from some crazy injuries or a bad call here and there and gets placed in the Olympics.
So they lost by 2 to Senegal, 4 to Algeria, and 7 to Ivory Coast. So a total of, what's that, 13 points for 3 games, you know. But still, they lost 3 games.
Yep, loss is a loss. And in a tournament, it should be much more fatal than in this new format where everybody advances. It's the ultimate in non-achievement. You know, it's just like, oh, congratulations, you advance, and everybody advances. You know,
I couldn't believe this format, and then I saw that the U17s are going to be like that, which means the U19s will be like that, the Worlds now, and I'm like, okay, if you guys want to do it like that. next one?
Sure.
Okay.
What do we got?
Actually, I sent you. I sent Oz the list. We kind of talked about it. And I sent him the list, and I almost wish I didn't send the full part of this entry. So Mike Krzyzewski had originally decided to step down from Team USA, and then decided to maybe I'll stick around for another cycle. Actually, you know what? Now I don't even know how long his contract now is, but he's going to stay with Team USA, I have in there our thing that I sent you. He has a 63-1 record with Team USA, and if I hadn't sent that to you, would you have known the one loss that he had to take?
Greece.
Yeah. Would you ever remember
the game?
Would you have remembered that?
Yeah, I remember that game.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember that game, and I kept thinking, gee, this team sure looks great on paper, but it's on the court, they seem to have a Kobe-sized hole out there. You know, I got into many a debate at ballineurope.com over this one, and sure enough, in the next tournament, we had Kobe on the team, and you know, he proved to be the dagger to win the medal. So I was glad I was vindicated on that. But yes, I remember this game clearly. I remember afterwards how, you know, Coach K had to explain to media that, you know, this is a growing experience. We have to go through this, da 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 da. And I would also note that this must be the tournament in which the Miami Heat Big Three came together, no? Or was it 2008? Maybe they met in 2006 and then solidified the deal in 2008.
I don't know if Bosh was. I'm looking, but so
the. I know Bosh was on the team in 2008.
Yeah,
with Kobe and the other two.
I'm looking at six. So 2006, which is where the U.S. lost to Greece in the semis, where after which there was the famous. That four guy for Greece is pretty good. I was talking about Theo Papaloukas.
Who was also in the debate for best player to ever play NBA. Yes?
So Chris Bosh was on the team, but Wade wasn't. Yes, he was. Mm-hmm. So this must have been where it started. So that was his first tournament as then the head coach, was the 06 World Championship. And he hasn't lost since. You know, he went undefeated at the Beijing Games Olympics, then at 2010 Turkey, and then obviously in 12. And I think what's impressive is the fact that you know there were you know really what three different teams, almost four different teams,
yes,
and took all of them to the title. So.
Yeah, because he had the redeem team. He had the so-called B team. He had the
He had the 06 team. He had the 06 team.
Yeah,
you know, which still had guys like Brad Miller, and Jameson and Kirk Heinrich and stuff like that. So I mean, there was Carmelo and there was Elton Brand. So there was Carmelo, Chris Paul, Wade, LeBron, Joe Johnson, Dwight Howard. But then there was the 08 Olympics where he won in Beijing. And then they totally redid the team for 2010. A lot of the guys said they didn't want to go. And that was Durant's team.
Yeah, that was the so-called B team.
With Rose,
yes.
Westbrook, Chandler, Love. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was the season in which we learned what playing for Team USA can do to your game. Coming out of that thing, guys like Westbrook and Love, you know, the next season completely made that leap to the next level, you know, based on their summer play with Coach K. Coach K has restored Team USA to greatness in international competition, and it's good to see him returning to this job. I mean, you gotta be jealous of this guy. He has what, the two best jobs in American basketball?
Yeah, probably pretty darn close. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know, I mean, you said that he, you know, basically, you know, it's not just him. It was also Jerry Colangelo. I mean, you definitely.
Oh yeah. No. This is a team effort. You know, this is like Belichick Kraft over there with the New England Patriots. I mean,
with
Belichick and Kraft. I got to get in my obligatory New England Patriots reference. So you know, this is football season. But this is a team effort. This is an organizational effort, which is the other important thing about Coach K. Is, you know, he was there for the revamp of the program, for the rethink of this program, and like I say, the restoration to dominance.
So it would have been interesting to see who they would have taken had he not come back.
Yeah. Most likely, you would think that, and you think that in the next guy.
I mean, his assistants are Boeheim and D'Antoni and McMillan at the.
Oh, D'Antoni! Oh my God! Yeah, this is what I want to see. I think that what they will probably do is they will opt for the stability situation. So they're going to be looking to, I think, the college ranks again, and they're going to be looking to a guy who has a secure position in the college ranks. I think they're going to try and find the next Coach K in terms of,
Billy
like, you know,
Billy Donovan.
There you go. There you go. It's got to be somebody who's committed for the long haul and shows a you know a willingness to develop players and develop systems in a short
Billy
time.
Donovan, Billy Donovan has been Team USA coach at the 18 and 19 levels the last 2 years.
I like this choice. There you go. Done, Dave. Call your people and make it so.
All right, next one.
Oh, the anti-Coach K, right?
Yeah, the other Coach K. We went with the theatrics of the Russian national team and the unceremonious departure of Fotis Kotsakaris as the Russian national team coach. Obviously, Russia were going to be a weakened team when you know you have guys like Hirapa and Kirilenko. I think Cowan was out as well. But I think that was quote it when Katsakaris was actually still on board. And then the shit hit the fan.
Yes. So it's too bad we can't translate that into Russian really quickly.
He was sacked in a sacked slash decided to leave.
You can't fire me, I quit.
Yeah. And in just some really that's just Russia being Russia, if you will, antics. And really left Sergei Karasev. Sergei Karasev is his brother, is the son. What's his father's name?
No. Mr. Karasev. Coach.
Coach Karasev, exactly.
Yeah.
Left him basically with a team. Okay, of course, there was also the injuries and everything else that, you know, Moskov went down, Vorontsevich went down. Yes, yeah, Vasily is the head coach. And then they had a new system that had to be installed and everything else. And Katsakaris had come from a pretty, you know, had really established himself as a pretty high level guy, you know, taking Bilbao to the final of the Euro Cup. Had taken over from, you know, he was stepping into some big time shoes in replacing David Blatt, who stepped down, obviously. And it's never easy to replace the big name, you know. It's almost easier to be the guy who replaces the guy, you know. And so he was stepping into a pretty big program, and the time of it was also really detrimental to Katsakaris as well, because by the time he was gone, almost all of the clubs, especially all the big decent sized clubs, had already had their coaches for the season. So he's more or less he's still just doing TV and doing whatever stuff right now, which means he's basically, you know, left without the chair, you know. And so,
wow. I mean look, you can yuck it up and say this is just Russian stuff, but the truth is that, you know, this is a real shame, and this situation is completely out of control. Look, this thing started with a shock, right? Wasn't it last year? It was around Christmas time last year when they announced this, and everybody was shocked that it wasn't Russian. You know, it wasn't a Russian national. Okay, the problem starts there. But then when you hear about this fallout of the team, you know, among the players themselves, you know, you hear about the stuff that Talk Basket broke, you know, about corruption, about bribery in the Russian Federation, typical Russian stuff, whatever. But the truth is, this could cost a team that was standing on the Olympic podium not long ago a bid in the next World Cup.
Well, it was 2012. They were in the Olympics.
Exactly. They were a podium team.
Yeah.
You know, they finished in that Olympics, you know. And it's like now here it is, like 2-3 years later.
Not even a year later.
They're not even considered among the elite teams of the world. I mean, you know, this is you know, say it's Russian whatever, but you know, to take down a prestigious national program like this in a couple of easy steps, you know, that's way beyond, you know, this sort of corruption that you get in Central Eastern Europe, with which I am familiar, at least, and folks out here are. I mean, that's well beyond this. It's a national shame. I mean, what's the equivalent of this for the U.S.? So after the last Olympics, they bring over, you know, Obradovich to coach the team. You know, players walk, Kobe gets injured, you know, Westbrook walks, whatever. And then, you know, the U.S. doesn't even win FIBA Americas. That's the equivalent. Can you imagine this happening? I mean, it's unthinkable in most countries.
Just a horrible situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny in one respect, but it's really not in another.
It's not funny at all.
How long will it take for them to come back from this? Now, this program to come back, and the truth is, you know, it's not like they've lost talent. It's not like the league is any worse. You know, it's not like the performance of the clubs is any worse, or the nationals on those clubs. Okay, it's not that.
Well, there's plenty of people out there who say that Russia's in a mess anyhow. Youth development, coaching development wise, you know, there's not a lot of talent.
Perhaps there is rot. Perhaps there is rot at the base. But I think on that club level right now, even you know, in terms of the NBA or whatever, I think that's a competitive nation. You may be right, though. You may be right. There may be something rotten in the state of Russia.
Let's hope not. And you know,
well, I mean, they just reached this pinnacle that they have not seen since the Soviet days. You know, and
I mean, there was obviously 2007 when they won Eurobasket, but
right,
you know, but this was the culmination. This was right. with Blatt, you know, and then you know, actually getting the Olympic medal, getting an Olympic medal again. So.
Again, restoring the team to dominance on the international level, but that disappears, you know, due to organizational stuff, you know, it's brutal.
Fontes Katsikaras is a great guy too, and it was a real disappointment. I had a chance to talk to him quite a bit during Eurobasket. He was there doing Greek TV, so great guy, and I just hope it's sooner rather later that he lands on his feet, but he will definitely land on his feet, so... So that's 16. Why don't we grab a quick tune, and we'll catch the next five.
My name is Dario Šarić. You listen and take it to charge.
Ho, ho, ho. On Sounds of the Teens this week. You just heard It's Christmas, Christmas Time by Junior 85, about whom I know nothing other than this track and a few others were recorded in 2012. You'll be hearing later, I'm Not Drinking for Christmas, not by the Wolfman, but by Derek Clegg, uploaded to freemusicarchive.org just last week. Fresh sounds only on this show.
Except for the times when I pick them.
Be sure to check out freemusicarchive.org for lots more in free music for download and use on podcasts like this one. And now, back to the top stories of 2013 on Taking the Charge.
Thank you, Ho-Ho Wolfman Oz.
Oh, you deigned to interrupt the Wolfman. I almost had to laugh and redo that one.
I'm not drinking for Christmas.
It's an instant classic. It's an instant classic. A week old, this thing should go viral. If there were any justice, they would have a million hits by the end of the week.
Yes, of course. What was the first song? Christmas. No, it's Christmas time. Yeah. Okay. So, yes, hopefully everybody is having a pleasant Christmas time. Yes. Had a good Christmas time, depending on when you listen to it, whatnot.
Most likely, most folks are going to be listening to this the day after, so happy Boxing Day.
Yes, Boxing Day. Okay, so story, we classify it as story 15 of 2013. I'm going to classify this one as saying, the EuroLeague saying, you know what, everybody else has said GB can't do anything with basketball, so we're taking our ball and...
Yeah, and going home. Going to Italy.
Going to Italy.
Yeah.
London. I can you say they successfully hosted the 2013 EuroLeague Final Four?
It depends what you mean. I mean, the organization was fine. Yeah, sure. Yeah. The broadcast was fine. You know, all of the staff. I mean, as a journalist, as someone with a pass at this event, you know, as a journalist I can say, wow, you know, the service people were great, you know,
the facility is great, the O2 there,
yep, is facility great. Is awesome, U2's O2 is great, you know, of course London itself is a cool city, you know, absolutely appropriate. I was surprised at the peripheral events, and I say peripheral only in the metaphorical sense, because wow, they really spread out the events throughout London associated with the Final Four.
They do that quite a bit. I mean, Istanbul, they had the fan zone way up on one of the hills. So
yes, that's right.
Yeah, I had to go up there and write about it. So yeah. So this is a combination of London.
What I wanted to say is I was surprised, even given the miserable weather at that time, the turnout for it. Really, anybody who loves basketball seemed to be at these events on those days. So that was a definite plus. But you know,
well, that's the story. It's a combination of London actually hosting the EuroLeague Final Four, and then EuroLeague saying, you know what, guys, thanks, but no thanks. We're not going to do it in 2014, and then decided to have the 2014 EuroLeague Final Four. I should probably say Turkish Airlines EuroLeague Final Four in Milan.
No, it was a nice try, but EuroLeague just wasn't willing to go double or nothing.
Yeah, which I think is good. I didn't agree with that
anyway. Ah, that was a crazy decision. Yeah. You couldn't do this with any city. Yeah. You couldn't justify this. Oh yeah, so in 2014-15 we're going to have it in Paris. I mean, why? Two straight years we're going to have it in Barcelona. Can you imagine?
It's a little bit of a detriment anyhow to the EuroLeague, because basically it just shows that all they care about is the arena. You know, it's mm-hmm. You know, they don't have, just put the thing in Kaunas, man. It's going to be packed. Put the thing in Belgrade. It's going to be full, you know.
Kaunas is a bit of a stretch to travel to, but you could do it. I mean, that's always been the argument against Moscow, right, is that it's too far. So you have to take this in.
Moscow, you also need visas for for Americans and some others as well. So.
Right. So this stands in the way. But yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, I think absolutely the time has come to have this in Lithuania. I mean, those folks know how to host a basketball event. you know, whether
they've had plenty of experience with FIBA and FIBA Europe stuff in the last few years.
Exactly. And I believe even if their clubs are not in the Final Four, which one can't imagine for many years to come, I think they would still fill the place. I think you'd still get tons of fans because those folks really care about basketball and they know how to publicize, they know how to host, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't see why they don't take this chance. I don't see why EuroLeague doesn't take this chance. I also thought the decision to put it in Milan was interesting because a couple of years ago, Milan had won the bid. And then they basically said, okay, we're not going to have our facilities ready in time. And so they had to switch it to what? Barcelona, I think. That was the year it was in Barcelona.
Okay, I don't remember that, but
so it was good to see them reward it to them, I suppose, for this. And I wonder if when they announced the London thing, they didn't have Milan in the back of their mind because they had to switch up that one year.
I say there's plenty of places out there that they should go. So.
Oh sure, in future, yeah. Let's have it in Lithuania, guys. Come on.
Yeah, definitely. So the next one we're kind of putting it under European League, European leagues, domestic leagues. That is sort of the title. Montepaschi Siena went in their seventh straight. We had Italian Serie A title. Sorry, Brose Baskets Bamberg taking title number 4 in a row in Germany. And then we had Nanterre coming and winning the French league. You want to start with Montepaschi?
Yeah,
seven in a row.
Wow. No, I don't. I want to talk about Nanterre. talk about your development programs.
Right,
I mean,
go ahead and talk about Nanterre.
This is a 20-year development program, I think, with the same owner and coach who are brothers, or same GM and coach, I should say, who are brothers, finally coming to fruition. But on the other hand, I got to say, Nanterre benefits from the catch lightning in a bottle tournament format. France shrunk their tournament, and I believe that Italy did as well. Germany did not. Am I correct? They kept a longer tournament format. Yes.
Germany's 5 games.
Right, and they kept that from last year.
Yeah. Italy did. Okay. Italy didn't shrink it. They had 7 games.
Yeah. Italy kept their format as well. France did not. France shrunk everything down to best of 3s, I believe.
This is 2005 is best of 5.
2013
is best of 5, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And those used to be best of 7. And then I believe they took the early rounds down to 3 from 5, yes?
Looking.
Because I'm pretty sure they trimmed this down. But again, here's Nanterre. Nanterre came into the season without their top U.S. player.
Actually, it says single match. They had single match.
Yeah. I remember they shrunk quite a bit.
Well, they went from, and in 04, they had best of 3. And then from 5 to 12, they had single game title.
Mm-hmm. And again, here's Nanterre coming in at 500 and winning the whole thing because of the small format. So I can't like them for that. However, they are competing in EuroLeague. They are apparently, you know, trying to build this viable program. Now one of the reasons why I'm kind of sour on Siena is basically because they won the Italian title, but it's like, I don't know, the effort or the combination to win in EuroLeague, at least this year, is just not there. And I'm sort of disappointed because I took them to advance, right? And they may yet advance, but not in a very pretty fashion.
We know they've advanced or not advanced when this show actually comes out.
Yeah, that's true. As we record this, we don't know. You will know by then. Bamberg, well, you know, I'm glad that they won their 4th straight title. Do you think that that could be their last one?
No. I still
think. So you think they're going to defend this year?
They are, without a doubt, in my eyes, they're still the favorites. I think, you know, they look, this is the champion that still needs to be taken out, down from the throne, you know? Okay, they might not have home court advantage, but I think they are going to have the by the end of the year, they'll have the mental fortitude to really beat anybody anywhere, anyhow. So, and you still have to knock them down, you know? And you know, there's still, man, it's only December, man. You're talking like May. And there's still that much more development that can be done.
Yeah,
and
there's a couple of free agency periods.
Those players are going to get better that they have, and that's the main thing. I mean,
yeah.
So
but can't Bamberg hit the ceiling? I mean, haven't they been playing with the core for a long time now? I mean, I'm not suggesting
that core was down to like three players only.
Yeah, this is true. I'm not suggesting that they have hit a ceiling because they have impressed me with. The EuroLeague play this year, they have stuck it out this year like they did not necessarily last year. So, I'm good for them. Now we mentioned that these are domestic champions, so I got a segue for you. We did not put Croatia on the list.
Well, we also didn't. Let's maybe touch Turkey really quick, huh? Because that was
yes, of course, the always exciting TBL playoffs.
Yeah. So. That, you know, like you said, it's always exciting. And I think that, you know, this league is just growing more and more, you know, and I almost wish it would be that it's almost higher rated, but you know, do you think that people really look at it and say, this is like one of the best in Europe, this league?
I don't understand why not, at least on the top half of the table. I mean, you know, it's getting to the point where it's like Spain, where basically your top half of the table is in one of the three tournaments, or at least gets invited to one of the three tournaments in Europe. There's a lot of clubs out there, and there's a lot of clubs willing to spend the money. And the result of this is, and you know, I think now that word is spreading among the players that, hey, you know, this is a pretty sweet country to play in. You know, you can get a good deal. I think this league is getting a reputation of having owners that, you know, take care of the players. And, you know, to some extent, the headline event was, you know, paying Allen Iverson to attend a football game and then play a few, you know, Euro Cup games.
Darren Williams as well.
Well, Deron Williams, yeah, that was basically like paying Deron Williams to get in shape.
He played more than Iverson did.
Yeah. Well, Deron Williams played. Yeah. You know, I mean, I
saw Iverson play in Germany.
Yeah, I know, but you know what I mean. Deron played with a capital P. You know, Iverson played with a lowercase p. He was there, and he was, you know, bringing the game and everything. But not only is Deron in his prime, you know, I think he was using this as a warm-up just in case the lockout finished. In any case, moves like this are symbolic that they will pay you to play for a short time. And, you know, the result of this is you get tournaments where anybody can win. And I think that's way more scintillating than either what happens in Italy every year, or, you know, the crapshoot in France, the crapshoot format in France, you know, where you might as well be playing NFL football and just have a game a week. You know, so I prefer the Turkish tournament much, much more to them. Now, maybe it's a question of these bottom teams or the second division holding down the reputation, but I would be willing to bet that players are beginning to believe that this is one of the top leagues.
So, you know, the story was Galatasaray, you know, winning their first championship since 1990, if you can believe that.
It's been dominated for so long by
Fenerbahce and Efes had a long run. Winning the first year. And what was also interesting was that Ergun Ataman coached Besiktas to the title in 11-12 and then moved to Galatasaray and won the title in 13. So, mm-hmm. good, really good story. You know, and again, you know, we really like the league, and, you know, Galatasaray, obviously, you know, if they had only half of the injuries that they've had this year, you know, 2014 can't be can't be any worse than the last half of
no, we'll see some revolving door stuff. We might see the return of Adam Morrison.
But and you look at you know, Banvit made the final. You know, and that was, you know, you had Galatasaray, who hadn't won since 90, against Banvit. And I mean, did Banvit ever won? I don't even know if Banvit ever won, you know. So exciting basketball there. And they play best of seven in the finals.
Mm-hmm. Yep. See, again, I don't know if there actually is a lot of money in Turkey, but there is the appearance of a lot of money for basketball in Turkey.
So that would have been their first title. They went to the semifinals. No, this is Banvit. They went to the semifinals in 10, 11, and 12, and then reached the final in 2013, the year we're looking back on. Okay, so you wanted to have a special mention about the Croatian league.
Yeah, another restoration of greatness, right? Or at least temporarily. No?
Yeah, sure. There's
Dario Saric comes aboard after. I mean, in terms of individual players, perhaps the most interesting calendar year was logged by Dario Saric, the, you know, prospective first round draft pick.
Be careful, because the calendar year didn't include the decision, the FIBA.
Right, but he started the year sitting.
No, you know, started the season sitting.
Right. But in January, I believe he was still at home. Yes, he did not land.
I don't think that.
I thought he landed with a club in February. This decision was finally cleared up.
I'll look at that now. But
in any case, Saric got aboard with his hometown team, Cibona Zagreb, a team who had been a EuroLeague team for many, many years until a couple, 3 years ago. Whereupon the team hit on, you know, hard economic times and whatnot, actually hadn't won the Croatian league title in a couple of years. And Dario, the spark plug, jumped aboard and led this team to the Croatian title. Good for them and good for Dario. Dario then went on to compete in U20s?
U19s.
U19s this summer, right? I always confuse them somehow.
U19 World Championship.
Right, chased this up with playing in the Euro Cup, in the international tournament, and now is still playing ball in Croatia in advance of. Oh wait, yes. Also, this summer he jumped out of the draft.
Jumped into the draft and then jumped out of the draft. Yeah,
out of the draft for consideration. So you got to throw that into his busy year, and finally back on the court. Now this will be his first uninterrupted season in a little while. So happy to see him back on board. But here's one to watch. Right, should be the top European player taken in the NBA draft in 2014. Should be what, one of the top two or three internationals. Yeah. So, one to watch. One mine to watch in 2014. Of course, I've been watching this kid for years. So I'm very excited for his 2014. I'm sure he is too.
The decision, the FIBA decision, came down, and he signed the 4-year deal with Cibona in November of 12.
Right, but when was it lifted?
Well, he played then. He signed the contract with Cibona in 12, November 12.
Oh, okay. I thought it had extended further into the season, so he only missed it. He only missed about a month and a half.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've talked enough about Dario. So, I think one of the other important things about this year, 2013. Was his was the maturation process of going to the senior national team and taking a different role, knowing that that's going to be his more of his role, not necessarily having the ball in his hand all the time, but still being able to do the things that he does. So,
really different roles on all these teams. I mean, for the club, he was a go-to guy. You know, for the U20 team, and I'm sure he was highly conscious of this. U19. I'm sorry.
Okay, it's okay.
Like I say, I have a mental block. For the U19, I can't believe this kid is under 19. For the U19 tournament, okay, he's the go-to guy. He's the stud on the team, but he has to bring his teammates along with him. You know, you can't play in the youth tournament just by yourself. And I think he's conscious of this. You saw him getting teammates involved. I mean, what? He led that tournament in assists, right?
He was second in scoring, second in rebounds, second in assist.
Okay, right. You know, he's a triple-double threat in this tournament in every game. So again, you know, he's doing it all. And then, of course, for the men's team, I mean, definitely not the go-to guy and relegated to you know, coming off the bench. But just, you know, again, just remarkable adaptability, showing that he can do any of these things. And you know, again, going into the draft, ultimately it's not going to matter where this guy is taken. If they want to plug him in immediately, he can probably do that. And if they want him, you know, eighth man, ninth man, he can probably do that. So it's a good sign.
Okay. So the last game... So against Oostende in the Euro Cup, he had 19 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists, averaging 13. No, that's the Euro. So he's averaging 12 and 8 plus 2.5 plus almost 3 assists. I was talking to a scout, and one of the things that he is worried about is that he's not working hard to get better, and that he's almost just. I'm not saying this is the actual you know what he is, whatnot. But this is what a scout said that he knows him pretty well. He's kind of frustrated that he's not working as hard as he would hope to get better. That he's living off the talent that he has. And then he kind of wishes that he would be working a little bit harder to get better. So I think 14 is going to be a really, really, really big year for him because, it would seem like he will go into the draft. Looking at 14 as we could, you know, we're going to take a look forward to 14, maybe one of the first podcasts of 14. He may have almost been better served to go in the 13 draft than in the 14 draft. But no, I'm just saying because, you know, obviously we know how stacked the 14 draft is, which we've also talked about. So, but Saric, you know, obviously everything, revolving around him. So we figured put him at 13. Obviously he fits into the number 12, which we put as the U19 World Championship in Prague, and that we saw. I think as you said this morning earlier, you said the steamrolling of Team USA. I think you're not far off.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Americans went 9-0, and I tell you, man. That was a stacked team. That was an impressive team. You had Aaron Gordon, you had Marcus Smart, you had Jahlil Okafor, Montrezl Harrell, Justice Winslow. Jonell Stokes is good. Gordon, I don't know if I said Gordon or not. One of the guys, and then you had like this guy. Alfred Payton, who was a to be junior, so you had some actually who were to be seniors in high school, but you had all the way up to actually to be juniors in Alfred Payton, who I wanted to say Tennessee Tech or something like that, but that, you know, basically was a nobody, a total nobody, and only because Coach Billy Donovan, going back to our Donovan, Coach K, he knew his coach, and his coach, Peyton's coach, called up Donovan and said, hey, bring this guy, you know, let this kid have a tryout, and because of Donovan's respect for Peyton's coach, Peyton got the tryout, made the team, and I want to say started all 9 games. I know he was definitely a starter, for most of them, if not all of the games. So yeah, just
he was the big winner. He was the big winner of the tournament. You know, this was the guy when you said, you know, who was the breakout guy. This was it.
I don't know about that, but he definitely showed that he, you know, I think if nothing else, this is going to get him a good hard look at some of the better teams in Europe. You know, I don't know if he's an NBA player. You know, I mean, he's older than he was older than everybody else. Sure, he played really hard, played really well, but I mean, I don't know if he's, you know.
Now, shouldn't we get him to college first?
No, to be junior in college, man.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, to be junior in college. So, it was just a joy to watch Gordon bounce around, and just the dominance of Okafor. I think I had the running bet.
Yeah.
I think I had the running bet that he was going to shoot 65% or better, and he ended up shooting 77% for the tournament.
Not a typo. That's the kind of statistic where you have to put that afterwards. Not a typo.
77% D'Leo Okafor. And he was, so he just turned 18 this month. He just turned 18 this month. So he was actually a 17-year-old at a U19, and he shot 77% from the field.
So if you're coaching him for the next tournament, what do you tell him?
Just
come on, you got to get that up to 85.
Just keep doing it. Just keep doing what you've been doing, young man. That's what I tell him. Don't change a thing. Don't go outside and do things you can't do. Just keep going what you do. So.
Yeah, exactly. I like this guy as an NBA guy, but I like this guy more as a national team guy. Going forward,
he'll be both.
I'd like, and it's interesting too that here's this team playing youth ball, and these are the guys. These are going to be some of the guys that are introducing the Adam Silver era over there in the NBA. Yeah, you know, this is the next wave here. You know, this is the post LeBron wave, if you will, right here. Some of these guys. It was really kind of a, you know, again, a lightning in a bottle situation, really kind of a perfect storm situation to build this club, which was top to bottom. I mean, just stocked. I mean,
well, this was also a continuation of, I think they had six or seven guys that were at the U18s the year before.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. A nice continuation of the program. Nice, you know, evidence that Team USA goes all the way down.
Obviously, USA, you can talk nonstop. But also impressive was Serbia, who finished up in second, took the silver. And their two losses were both against the United States. And both of them. They showed, you know, hey, you know, this, we're pretty good too, you know, that we, you know, that we could stick with them a while. And, you know, just a little bit, the lack of depth in over the long term, I think, was the difference.
Well, it's reason for optimism in a lot of ways in Serbia lately, especially over at Ball in Europe. You know, a lot of folks over there are complaining that, you know, the financial structure of the basketball federation is whack.
But they're still producing. They're still producing kids.
That they're not producing their proper talent, and when they do,
I don't know.
And when they do, they're just fodder for overseas. But this is a nice.
Well, has to do with the clubs that they need to have more money. You know, Partizan is obviously helping. You know, with that, but you know, but obviously you had Vasily Misic. You know, I mean, this, you know, his, you know, this was the, you know, the guy who went on to, you know, pretty successful Eurobasket as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was clearly the leader, and he was poised in those games against the United States. He showed he can play against those guys. You know, Nikola Milutinov was a good center. Nikola Jankovic as well, a nice player forward. And, you know, so it was a nice group. You know, you know, so they took the silver. Bronze went to Lithuania, who Yeah, you know, I think that's, you know, that's definitely a solid result for them. You know, I think other teams could have taken it as well, but you know, I mean, Gorgonis, you know, he seems to be to really like the ball a lot, and to put it mildly, and Dimsha as well. They both seem to be a little bit of lovers with the ball, and but I think that a guy like that Dennis Krishnanin is really. For me, I had heard about those other two guys, and for me, he was the main guy who impressed me.
Yeah,
a willingness to just, you know, do not worry about scoring, but he's a heck of a rebounder. You know, he's really not that big, but he really impressed me. So just looking to see what size he's at. So he's, you know, he's 2 meters and. And he, you know, he had seven rebounds in 4 games, at least, you know, two times he was in double digits. And I wrote a story about him. I think he had a 26 rebound game, you know, at a guy 2 meters, you know, I mean, that's pretty solid. I think he actually, one of his role models, if I'm not mistaken, was the round mound of rebound, Chuck, Charles Barkley. So, obviously it was fun watching. It was fun watching Dante Exum. I think Jonah Bolden,
yes, right,
is another guy who I think he's gone over to the States now to play high school and will play college ball probably. I think a lot of people are going to like him. Spain, there are a couple of interesting guys. Nobody, you know, Hernan Gomez was fun to watch. You know, I think he could have stood out a little bit more. Sebastian Saiz was a guy who seemed to be you know, he went over to play high school in the States and definitely started lifting weights in the States. That's what you can tell. You know, Canada was nice to see. You know, there was some decent talent on that team. You know, what's his name? Wiggins could have come, but ended up not going.
Yes.
Which was kind of a disappointment, but you know, there was Tyler McIntyre, Trey Lyles, Rathan Mays was good too. China finished seventh, which I really thought that was one. I think their best showing in international play ever at the youth level, and obviously their two guys were Jiku, the big guy, and then Zhiwei Zhao. Their feisty little point guard, and Croatia, man, Croatia—they just once they were out of the medals for sure, they just like fell apart, and you know, they didn't even come together. They didn't even come together in the circle after the games was over. You know, as a full team.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the team was stacked. You know, you had Saric, but you also had Mavra. You also had Brzezina. You know, once they, I don't know if it's just their mentality, but I don't know. They just seemed to be, I don't know, lose their mind or something. So,
well, hope it's a blip. I mean, you know, they went into this thing with high expectations, and you know, I mean, these are young guys. Once your expectations are crushed, you know, you are crushed. You know, so you know, you can chalk this up to being a young man thing, but a young man with much upon their shoulders. I mean, like I say, expectations were pretty high. Croatia seems to be entering with some of their younger players, you know, kind of a golden age. It's a little bit early to say that, but they're definitely pumping out some high level players.
Hazonia didn't come. You know, Hazonia was another one. Right. You know, I think he had an ankle injury or something like that, and he ended up not coming. That would have been
this loss hurt. But I think this is just disappointment. I hesitate to chalk it up to anything greater going forward.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned a glorious age. There's still kids coming up, and I'm talking like I'm talking even after Sezonia, you know, you know, Lovro Mazelin, Gagnic, Arapovic. Croatian fans can be pretty happy about their future right now.
Yeah, but don't put too much pressure on your guys.
Yeah.
Croatia.
Yeah, sure. Move to number 11. Turkey. Finally winning their first ever U18 European Championship gold. Took silver back in 4 and 5, and then bronze in 9 and 11. And finally went to the top of the heap. MVP was our boy, Kenan Sepahi.
Well, a lot of people's boys right now.
Yeah, sure. So they knocked off Croatia, which we just mentioned, was pretty stacked. I always love Turkish hoops, youth hoops, and stuff like that.
And where is that tournament held, Dave?
That tournament was, hang on 1 second. Sorry, computer's stuck. So they beat Croatia. It was in Liepāja, in Ventspils, and Riga in Latvia.
Right.
Who are also doing a lot of tournaments.
So, you know, I just wanted to point out that, you know, here is a tournament victory by a Turkish national team, not in Turkey. Yeah,
good point.
Yes, because I know that
they've gotten that monkey off their back already.
Right. Well, on the youth level, though.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I mean.
So maybe, you know, if some of these players stick with the national team, they can finally break that barrier someday.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good team, you know.
Yeah, it is.
Medikan Burzan, Shedi Osman, Urgulu, Kanter's younger brother, Ulubay. You know, it's lots of nice names on that team. So,
and led by Sepahi.
And led by Sepahi, who obviously then finished, you know, then took the big step going from Tilfus to Fenerbahce. And was starting games for Zlatko Obradovic, you know, which is, you know, big time respect, you know.
Yeah, for one of the best teams in the EuroLeague, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, one of the, you know, definitely one of the top three teams.
18-year-old, an 18-year-old.
Yeah, right. So pretty good year.
And doesn't turn 19 until the playoffs. You know, he's a late May birthday. So.
Mm-hmm. Good calendar year for Mr. Sepahi. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so that's the first half. Why don't we call it a show? We're gonna go record.
Let these folks get back to Christmas.
Yeah, we're gonna record the other half of the show right now.
Yeah.
And you can listen to it in a week.
Exactly. It's time travel. It's time travel.
Okay, thanks a lot. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas, everybody. Enjoy the rest of the holidays. And we will actually talk to you in 2014. So enjoy the show, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening. And may all your Christmases
be bright.
Be bright.
For Christmas, New Year's can't come too soon, and I'm not drinking for Christmas. I've got my mind on all these other things, like who needs their winter hat and glove and coat. I used to sip this, now I don't, and I'm not drinking. Christmas, New Year's can't come too soon. I'm not drinking for Christmas. I've got my mind on all these other things, like who will hang up these stockings? Where did all the candy go? I'm not drinking for Christmas. I forgot my mind on all these other things, like needs their winter hat and glove and coat. I used to sip this, but now I don't. I think I'm headed to Boston. headed to Baltimore. I've got all those things to say. Like, who needs their winter hat and glove and coat? I used to sip this, but now I don't. Who needs their winter hat and glove and coat? I used to sip this, but